Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Stormkeep. It is an exciting time to play Age of Sigmar with Season 3 starting. There's a whole bunch of wizard shenanigans going on, and today I'm joined by...
Hey, it's just me, Daniel.
Dan and I are going to be running you guys through the basics of list building for Stormcast Eternals for match play, and looking at how to expand those concepts to suit your personal taste. The purpose of this video is not to craft the best, strongest, most competitive list. The purpose of this video is to help you guide your thinking into how to start building lists for Stormcast Eternals, because there's 75 different options that you can pick from, and about 40-something of them are viable, and then knowing how to combine them all, it's a complicated thing. So we're hoping this video will help shed some light on that.
Yeah, this new season is very cool, and we'll talk a bit about how those rules interact, but really we want to get down to the nitty-gritty of what we, you know, what goes into building lists, what we think about, and how, you know, how the building blocks come together. So, yeah. And before we get started with that, let's give a shout out to our awesome sponsor for the Stormkeep podcast, Kaiju Gaming Lounge, located in Orlando, Florida, run by some great guys. They handle all kinds of wargaming products, whether it's, you know, actual models from Games Workshop, other games such as Shatterpoint, or different gaming aids for each of those games. We have different kinds of measuring tools for everything, AOS 40K, and even some custom ones for the Stormkeep that you can see pictured here. We have a 7-inch and 9-inch stick, all in one. So you can go ahead and, you know, use the 9-inch for your regular Scions and 7-inch for anything that's closer. You know, you can use it for Seraphon, you can use it for Beast of Chaos. They're really cool sticks. They come in many different types, so check them out. And also, I think they've got a couple of our dice as of recording this video right now. They're pretty cool. So yeah, check out Kaiju. Use code Stormkeep and let them know that we sent you.
The very basics of Stormcast list building is this concept known as the hammer and anvil. We've definitely done a whole video about this before. I believe it's episode number 9, so it should pop up on the screen now if you want to go watch that. But to give you guys a quick summary of what the hammer and anvil is, it's a very common strategy in warfare. It comes from blacksmithing, where you take a piece of hot metal then you put it on an anvil and you beat it into shape with a hammer. The idea is you hold it in place with the anvil and then you hit it with the hammer. And when you're talking about, you know, warfare or strategy games, we're not taking this as seriously as real world combat, but at least in terms of tabletop gaming, an anvil is a unit that holds the enemy in place, and then a hammer unit comes in, usually on a flank or from behind, in order to destroy the unit. Now, hammer is kind of a general term, even though it does refer to a melee weapon. Hammer units can be melee or ranged. You could hold the enemy in place with a unit of spearmen and then shoot them down with crossbows from behind. So hammer just refers to damage dealing, and anvil refers to holding the enemy in place. Anvils can be something very durable, like a unit of protectors. They're very tough. They have a 2-up save, tons of wounds. Or it can be something very flimsy, like a unit of clan rats. Or Aether Wings, yeah. The point is it just stops the enemy from moving past that point, because in Age of Sigmar, you have to finish your movement phase more than 3 inches from enemy units, which means they can't just walk into combat with other units. You have to charge, and controlling the charges is a very important part of the game. A unit like Aether Wings would be called a screen. It's something fragile, something the opponent just blows through. It's not meant to stick around for long. It's meant to stick around for exactly one turn. Whereas a unit like Protectors would be something that we would call like a wall unit. It's meant to sit there and hold the enemy in place for multiple turns. It's meant to be durable. Stormcast units in particular are quite specialized. Many of them are either hammers or anvils. Some of the, you know, support heroes don't really fall into this categorization, but Stormcast have so many units that we end up with specific niches for them. So just looking at some common hammers that you'll see in lists, you've got Fulminators, Vanguard Raptors, especially with the Longstrike crossbows, are very effective right now. Evocators do a ton of damage. Karazai does a ton of damage. All of these units are very, very good at doing damage. Then you have anvil-type units. You have something like Liberators, which have a 3-up save on 10 wounds. You know, typically they're more of a screen because you don't want to bring too many of them, but if you bring 10, 15 of them, they start to turn into a wall unit. Annihilators with shields. They have a 2-up save. They only have 9 wounds, so they have that flaw, but they are, you know, categorized as an anvil. The Stormstrike Chariot is not obviously an anvil because it's fast, and you would think anvils might be a slow unit, but the Stormstrike Chariot is a specific type of anvil called a pinner. The idea with the chariot is to hold enemy units in place after a long move. And finally, Stardrakes are a big monster anvil. They're meant to be a wall. You can buff them up like crazy with defensive bonuses, and they can hold back a huge part of the enemy army before finally going down.
Yeah. Some of my favorite units, though, do all both of those roles at different times, sometimes even at the very same time. Tempesters are a great unit. They're a pure hybrid unit, which is also pretty cool. They're a very complex unit, I think. But they can also be a hammer as well as an anvil in some occasions. Sometimes you've got to use their move. They move faster than your typical shooting unit to put wall things off. Stormdrake Guard are very efficient at being an anvil. Due to them having access to roar, being a monster, their 3-up save, their wound count, their coherency. There's a lot of different reasons why, but they do a very good job. They can do both. They do an okay amount of damage, and then protectors as well. Them being a bit slower, but being a big wall and a 2-up save that though doesn't move very fast, it's very hard to move them from where they are and get them, take them off of the board.
And they deal decent damage too, right? Five
Yeah,
attacks
they
per
do.
model on threes, threes rend two. That's a good amount of damage that they can deal. So, like I said, most of the units in the Stormcast army are specialized. If you bring a unit like Vanguard Raptors, it's not a good idea to put that on your front line. You want that hitting, sitting in the back, protected from combat, protected from other shooting. You want them dealing damage every single turn. A unit like Evocators, probably not going to survive multiple rounds of combat. You want to get the big hit with them, and then hopefully by then you've crippled the enemy army. Whereas a unit like, let's say, Stormdrake Guard, they're not going to kill the whole enemy army by themselves in, two rounds even. But they're so defensive, they're so tough, they've got so much utility. They can sustain themselves for a long period of time, hold things in place so that other units in your army can work around that. So this is the most common tactic that you'll see in Stormcast Eternals, and we are very, very good at it. Most armies, in fact, even do this, some form of this, I would say. There's very few armies that don't have units that are either hammers or anvils and work together. So it just so happens that Stormcast are very specialized in this way. Probably because we have 75 different units, and if we didn't have specializations, a lot of them would just be unusable.
Absolutely.
Let's take a look at the specific changes, just a quick overview of what happened this season in case you're just jumping into Age of Sigmar. We will be considering all of these when we talk about list building, and this season will last for a whole year. So hopefully this is evergreen for a little while at least. There is a new unit type called the Antorian Locus. We are playing in Antor, the Bitterland. It's a realm of frost and primal magic, and any wizard hero with less than 10 wounds and is not unique gains the Locus keyword, Antorian Locus. If you're going second in the round, one Locus in your army can cast and unbind one more spell than they would normally do in that round, which is very useful. So you probably want to have at least one of these things in your army to take advantage of that ability. In addition, Locus can use what's called Lore of Primal Frost. There's three incredibly powerful spells that are all very difficult to cast. I believe they have cast values of 8, 10, and 12, which on two dice, rolling an 8 is very difficult. But thankfully, they've introduced this mechanic called Primal Magic, where at the start of the phase, there's like a surge of primal energy, and each player gets, somewhere between 0 and 2 primal dice that they can use. And this is at the start of each player's turn, right? Not just at the start of the round. So a player going second can pool their dice and have a big round of casting. The player going first, might have to hold back a little bit because they have to save some dice to unbind the next turn. So all of this is a really big revamp for magic casting in this game. And it's supplemented by things like new battalions, both of which are pretty interesting, I'd say. One of them gives you more primal dice, and the other one gives you bonus attacks when you're fighting wizards. And then there's, in case you don't have wizards, they're introducing this thing called Nullstone Adornments. These can only be used by armies with zero wizards, or even units that can cast something like they were a wizard. So if Caradhran Overlords, for example, brings their spell in a bottle that lets them cast an endless spell, they can't bring any of these. It's very, very restricted who can take these, and their effects are specifically meant to disrupt wizards. And I think you're going to see a lot of wizards because, in addition to all the special rules that we have, the endless spells have also been updated. If you're just getting into Age of Sigmar, endless spells are a very cool addition to the game. And I think this time around, they finally made them incredibly strong, but also costed appropriately to the point where you're going to see a lot of wizards trying to cast these spells to take advantage of them. Some of them are like the Aetherward Pendulum, which can deal d6 mortal wounds to a whole bunch of different enemy units in a line. One of them is like the Maelstrom, which has a huge threat range and just explodes even if it's dispelled. So even if your opponent tries to counter you, they still take damage from it. You've got the Geminids disabling commands. There's a lot of great spells now. And to top it all off, we have 12 new battle plans. And if you've watched our live streams recently, about 10 of them are playable and good, arguably. So there's a lot of variety, and then there's a lot of things to discover as we go through this season. So with all of these things in mind, we thought we would prepare a couple of starter lists here. And now, Dan, run us through what our thought process was when we picked the units and the battalions and the enhancements. Everything that we did here has been purposeful. There's no accidents here. So let's run through it.
Yeah, absolutely. So just from the very beginning, the basic core of the list, and we're going to talk about the core a little bit later, but we wanted a priest, we wanted our knight encanter, and we wanted, obviously we needed our screens, right? That's kind of the core that we're going to build around here, and you can see that very clearly.
Why in particular do we want those units? Why do we want a priest? Why do we want a knight encanter? And why do we want, in this case, two units of vanquishers?
Lord Relictor is super, or a priest rather, so Lord Relictor is just the priest in this situation in particular, provides us access to our prayer lore, which is actually very good, but one of the best spells in our prayer lore is going to be translocation, which is a teleport spell that we can do in the hero phase.
Translocation is an incredibly important part of the Stormcast toolkit. It like Dan said, it's a prayer that only priests can do, and it's so powerful that you want to bring a priest to pretty much every single list. Like, you need a good reason not to include a priest. So what it does is it just allows you to pick up a unit, take it off the battlefield, and put it literally anywhere else more than 9 inches away from an enemy. Since Stormcast are usually a pretty slow army, this is an incredibly powerful effect. I mean, this is powerful in any army, but when you put it in Stormcast, who have access to very powerful shooting and the ability to boost charge rolls with an ally that we've listed here, the Battle Mage, which we'll talk about shortly, translocation is very, very important. So that's why this guy's included. The Lord Relictor in particular happens to be our strongest priest, but he's also our most expensive. Now, he has an ability to add one to prayer rolls, which instead of chanting translocation on a 3+, you're now chanting on a 2+, which effectively reduces the amount of times it fails in half, because instead of failing on two of the results, it fails on one. In addition, it's pretty common in Stormcast lists to see High Priest. It's a command trait that you can put on your general. You'll note the general's marked by a G next to their name. The general in this army usually doesn't matter that much. It just determines who gets the command trait. And the command trait we really want is High Priest, which allows you to reroll prayer rolls. So now the odds of failing translocation, instead of a 1 in 3, it's now a 1 in 36. So it becomes a very reliable tool for us to use.
Mm-hmm. One of the biggest reasons we want to pick a Lord Relictor here, actually, when you can fit the points, is not just that you can get that translocation on a 2+. If you were to downgrade to something like a Knight Relictor, which is only 100 points, right? You're already taking a significant chunk of points off. The Knight keyword for translocation only allows you to translocate if your target is wholly within 9 inches of your priest. So that can limit you tactically, and something that you have to keep in mind if you do want to, you know, change up this list, which we'll talk about a bit later.
So Dan, tell me about the Knight Encanter. Why is that such an important inclusion?
Yeah, so the Knight Encanter, especially with this season's focus on magic, the Knight Encanter has an ability called the Voidstorm Scroll. And what it does is when you go to unbind an ability, you can choose before you roll to unbind or anything. So you do have to, you know, you have to make a choice to forego a regular roll and see if you can do it normally. You can just automatically do this. And it's a once per game ability. So it's something that you want to make sure that you're doing when you really need it, right? You probably don't want to auto-unbind a spell that was cast on a 5. You might want to just take those chances and go ahead and roll for it. But if you're going against somebody who used their primal dice and you've already used up your primal dice denying something else, right? If it's an important spell, you can go ahead and just snap your fingers and it's gone. So having that flexibility and that threat, that's another thing, is the threat of that will make your opponent play differently. We'll talk about, you know, deployment matters a lot with this unit, as well as just having access to our spell lore is another right. important thing.
Yeah, you touched on this, but unbinding requires you to be within 30 inches of an enemy wizard. So what's really useful with the Encanter is knowing which spell you want to unbind from the opponent's army and where that wizard is going to be placed. So that's actually one of the reasons this list has more than a single drop. And if you want to know more about drops, check out our video, Drops in Battalions. It's a little out of date because it was talking about Season 2, but the same concepts still apply. So there should be a link coming up to that on screen now. The Knight Encantor is so important to this game plan that we've actually given him the Mirror Shield, which is an artifact that prevents enemies from shooting him unless they are within 9 inches. There is a new rule added with the Battle Scroll just now that heroes like the Knight Encantor can't be targeted by missile weapons unless the enemy's within 12 inches. But this just prevents all shooting unless they're within 9. So you can put him aggressively up front, and he's completely safe from all enemy shooting. Unless he gets charged. And then, you know, you should just put some stuff in the way and then he should be fine. What's the spell we gave him, Celestial Blades? What does it do and why did we pick that one?
Yeah, Celestial Blades is part of our spell lore, and some of our spell lore options are not as great, because a lot of them don't buff our units very well. Celestial Blades, however, it brings a very important. It's a very simple buff, really. If you just look at it, you're like, wow, is that really that great? It is a +1 to your wound rolls. So after you've made your rolls to wound, you've made your attack rolls, and you're now your hit rolls, and you're now rolling to wound, you get to add one to the results on all of your dice that you're rolling to wound. This is especially important. You know, it makes your attacks more accurate. You're going to get more attacks in right from your hit roll having gone through. Typically, the hit roll is easy to get a +1 to attack because of the all-out attack command you can use during your combat phase. You can get a unit, a lot of our units, most of them, hit on a 3. So, you know, if you use all-out attack, you can now get to a 2, right? It's adding one to your hit rolls. If you've got Celestial Blades as a buff on a unit, you now have +1 to your wound rolls. So a lot of our attacks are what we call on threes and threes, hitting on threes and then wounding on rolls of three. This makes those twos and twos when put together, right? You're wounding on an effective two, and you're still wounding on threes, but you're adding one to a roll, so it's an effective two.
Right, and that's basically the highest accuracy you can get in the game. Because ones
Absolutely.
always fail no matter what you do. So when you have a unit like what we put in this list, four fulminators, they do a ton of max damage, but their accuracy is three up to hit, three up to wound. When you buff that up to two up hit and two up wound, there is almost nothing in the game that can survive a charge from the fulminators. So that's why that spell has been picked in order to boost the accuracy of the fulminators. Or in a pinch, it could even be used on the Stormdrake Guard that we've included. And we'll talk about those units shortly.
Yeah, absolutely. With the advent of several debuffs in the game happening, a bonus to wound is just very important. I wanted to touch back on the point with the mirror shield. It's good to note that when you're deploying the United Cantor, you know you can deploy him aggressively, but you also need to make sure, you know, if an army can charge you turn one, it's something you want to talk with your opponent about. If they can get to you, you want to go ahead and move that guy out of the way. But still, that mirror shield is not something we'd normally take in a lot of our list building. I just want to kind of mention that it's a very good artifact, right? You're like, oh, you can't be shot. But especially with the new season rules, it's maybe not as important as it used to be. And we sometimes want to take what's called an Arcane Tome, which is another artifact that turns a unit into a wizard. So just something to note, mirror shield isn't necessarily the go-to. It's just the best one for this particular list because we have no unit that can take a mirror sh or a Arcane Tome because priests and wizards who are You know, they're already wizards. They can't take an arcane tome to become a wizard.
Right. Now let's talk about the Battle Mage, because this guy is an ally. That's denoted by the A tag next to his name. What makes the Battle Mage so special? It's not a Stormcast unit, but it's something we are recommending to people who are picking up the army for the first time. So it's got to be really important, right? What makes it so special that it deserves an inclusion here?
Yeah, so the Battle Mage, he's not very, you know, if you look at the War Scroll just base, he doesn't look very interesting, right? Yeah, I think he's got like a 6 up save, something very low, 5 wounds like the Encanter, but a lower save. And the real important thing is when you look down the War Scroll and you see his War Scroll spell, or rather, you'll see a section involving you can pick a realm, so from the Mortal Realms in Age of Sigmar that he's from, and he will get a spell that is based on that Mortal Realm. The one we have chosen here is the Realm of Gur, which is also the one that the GHB, so the pitched battle profile, the match play pack that we're playing in, is set also in the Realm of Gur. What that means for him is that he will get a bonus to cast. So much like, you know, we talked about our bonuses to wound rolls, he'll get a +1 to his cast roll, and that's pretty important. But also, what he's casting is important because allies can't learn spell lores, right? Even though he is an Atorian locus, he'll get the keyword. He doesn't get access to the lore, but he will get access to his War Scroll spell, which for the Realm of Gur is called Wild Form. Wild Form is another additive bonus, you know, adding to your rolls. This one's adding a +2 to your charge roll. So, you know, already that seems pretty great, right? Like you want to be able to charge farther. You want to be able to, you know, if you move up to somebody with your fulminators, right? Just base, you buff them up with Wild Form. You move up to somebody, and you've moved up 5 inches away. If they roll a redeploy and they roll, say, a 3 on that, suddenly they're 8 inches away because they've gotten to move, right? With that command that allows them to move away from you. You're still feeling pretty okay because you have a +2 to your charge roll. So even if you roll a 6, for example, you'll get the +2 to get that 8-inch distance. So that's pretty good, right? You're thinking, okay, all right, that seems pretty great, right? Fulminators are our main hammer here. We want to go ahead, you know, for our hammer and anvil tactics, have them be more consistent. What this also opens up is a combination with our Lord Relictor with translocation. So we talked about earlier, translocation lets you teleport 9 inches away, anywhere on the board, as long as you're 9 inches, at least 9 inches away, from an opponent. So with that, you can teleport your unit of Fulminators, for example, and if they've got this buff from the Battle Mage, Wild Form, they're going to get a +2 to the charge roll. So that means that that 9-inch charge now becomes an effective 7-inch charge, which is about, I believe it's like an 84% chance if you are
Yes.
to use the command to reroll charges forward to victory. So you can now make those Fulminators be a threat almost anywhere on the board if an opponent isn't screened out properly. So this is an extremely powerful effect to be able to threaten, and that's why it's such so core that even though we may see an update to the Cities of Sigmar book later on, a couple months here, it's still such an important unit that I wanted to include it here.
Yeah, and in the future, you could swap this out for something like a Knight Zephyros, which is a hero that can teleport every turn, or another priest. You could bring a Knight Relictor who can chant another prayer for you. But for the time being, the Battle Mage is incredibly useful and gives Stormcast mobility that we wouldn't have access to otherwise.
Absolutely.
So, Dan, why did we include 2 units of Vanquishers? There are a lot of other units we could have chosen. Why did we include 2 units of 5 Vanquishers? What do they do that's so useful?
So, Vanquishers are so every unit in the game has a battlefield role, and these Vanquishers happen to be battle line in Stormcast, and it doesn't matter what kind of Stormcast you're. It could be Hammers of Sigmar, Astral Templars, Hallowed Knights. Vanquishers are going to be battle line. And most importantly, they are the cheapest universal battle line that we have access to. So Vanquishers are going to fill that role, and you're going to need in a 2,000 point army 3 battle line units. You're going to pick up. You're going to need to fill those slots. So here in Hammers of Sigmar, we happen to have extra battle line roles, but we still need to fill out, right? The Fulminators you'll see have a B next to them that shows that they're battle line. But you still need to fill out 3 slots. So we're going to bring our Vanquishers, which are also battle line. And that'll fill up our 3 slots. Now, on top of that, Vanquishers, they don't have the best save in Stormcast. It's a 4-up save, so it's not amazing. But you are paying less. You're paying only 100 points for them than other units that are screens, such as we talked about Liberators have a 3-up save, but they're a little bit more expensive. In our list, though, you want to go ahead and pick the most efficient units you can. And something that is going to be our anvil that we're that. You almost expect it to die. It's gonna stand in the way and take those hits for you when you don't want to take them on something important like your Vanguard Raptors. You want something that's gonna be efficient. If it's gonna die, you might as well not spend too much on it. And especially currently in the game, there is a high amount of rend and even mortal wounds. So spending for the save isn't as important as spending to make sure you've got utility, you've got damage. So you can cut corners here, right? You can take Vanquishers as opposed to like Vindictors who have a 3-up save but are 20 points more a model. So once you've filled in 2 slots, you're already 40 points down on your list to where you could have been. And you'll notice at the bottom here, this is a 2,000 point list on the dot. We got that 2,000 in the corner. So we don't actually have any room to upgrade, unfortunately. So you can upgrade your screening units, if you've got your battle line. You can go ahead and upgrade them, and it's good to do so, but it's typically something I do at the end of a list build rather than just, slapping in a squad of Vindictors.
Right. And Vanquishers are super important. There's other units that could fill this role, but Stormcast really wants something that can just die. As silly as that sounds, like you can't stop your opponent from charging, but you can choose what they're going to charge at. So you have a choice. You can put 5 Vanquishers, which cost 100 points, in the way of an enemy that's about to charge, or you can put an expensive unit like, let's say, Fulminators in the way. Now, if you can't stop your opponent from charging and you don't have a way to strike first, they're probably going to kill whatever you put in the way. So all you're doing is choosing, do I want to lose 100 points or do I want to lose 200 points? And Vanquishers and similar units are necessary in our tactics because of that purpose. There are even ways to revive a unit as it's doing this, which makes it very efficient as a tactic. That hasn't been included in this list, but it is something we'll talk about later. So you need a unit like Vanquishers, and they're really important because they can stand in front of the Fulminators in order to absorb the charge, and that way the Fulminators can then counterattack at full health without losing any models. It's also really good when you're trying to protect shooting units. The very common tactic of putting your shooting units behind your melee screens is alive and well in Stormcast as in every army. So let's talk about the shooting units we've included in here, because we talked about the Fulminators. They do a ton of damage. They're your cavalry heavy hammer. We've got our screens with the Vanquishers. Let's talk about the shooting choices we've brought in here. First up, we've got a unit of Vanguard Raptors with long straight crossbows. These guys are great because they have a tremendously long range, 30 inches. In addition, they can shoot after moving, which gives them an effective threat range of 35 inches, which is huge. It's one of the longest threat ranges in the game. They're also incredibly accurate. You know, they hit on threes, wound on twos, rend two, and if they get a hit roll of six, they just do mortal wounds. So they're very, very accurate. They, whatever you hit, you will do a reliable, like, 8 damage, roughly, every time you shoot with them. And they can also be boosted with all-out attack in order to be on twos to hit, twos to wound, rend two. So this unit is just going to be taking chunks out of enemies every single turn. Why we've chosen to only bring three of them is because you can use a special ability called a Holy Command, Thunderbolt Volley. Thunderbolt Volley is a command ability used in the hero phase. It allows a basic non-reinforced unit to shoot in the hero phase. In this case, the Vanguard Raptors are going to be using this in order to shoot twice in the first turn, basically. They're going to take down a key target and then provide fire every single round for the rest of the game. But Vanguard Raptors have a big problem, and that problem is they only do a maximum of 12 damage per turn. Right? The first turn, when you Thunderbolt Volley, they can do 24 damage maximum, but at most they're doing 12 per turn, and that's really poor damage output for a unit that costs 230 points. If you're fighting against something like big hordes of squigs or zombies or just a ton of wounds in general, long strike crossbows are not the way to go. What you want in situations like that is a unit like Judicators with Boltstorm crossbows. Now, these guys are effectively 4 shots apiece, right? They have 2 attacks and they all double when they hit, so they're basically 4 shots apiece on threes and threes. So they have a tremendous amount of shots. That's going to be 40 shots, of basically, just quick napkin math here, that you can boost to hit on twos and wound on threes. It doesn't have any rend, so it's not going to punch through any armored units, but that's where your long strike crossbows and fulminators come into play. The Judicators are there to deal with the light armored targets and just provide a ton of damage output. So max damage output for this unit is 40 for 380 points versus Vanguard Raptors doing 12 for 230 points. So you can see that these two units complement each other very well. You want units that can deal with hordes and you want units that can deal with armored.
Absolutely.
And finalizing the list, we have Stormdrake Guard. I know this is one of your favorite units, Dan, so tell us why they're in this list.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This is, it's such a versatile unit. It is going to come at a premium. It is 340 points, so it's going to take a good chunk off of your list. But you're going to be very happy in the situations where they shine, which this unit is an absolute Swiss Army knife in the army. It doesn't do the most damage, but it does a decent amount of damage, and it has a decent mortal wound profile as well with its breath attacks, which can, you know, sometimes those breath attacks can swing high just because they basically have like a mechanic where if you're rolling fives and sixes, they do D6 mortal wounds as opposed to D3, like the Drakoths do, for example, of Fulminators. So there's some room for them to surprise an opponent, and it's something they have to keep in mind, right? Like, you're not necessarily counting on it when you're fighting with them to shoot something and do a bunch of mortal wounds to it, but an opponent absolutely has to respect the fact that they can do 12 mortal wounds max there. So it is something to keep in mind. But on top of that, they have a very consistent profile. They're, you know, rend 1 or rend 2, depending on if you're taking lances or swords on the charge. If you check in our Discord, I actually wrote up a little write-up, basically, on just how to pick between the two weapon profiles. And it's kind of similar to what we talked about with the Raptors long strike crossbows, as well as the Boltstorm crossbows. Swords are more more volume of attacks, much like the Judicators. The lances, if you're on the charge, have more rend, so they're a bit more like the Raptors. It's not a huge difference, but it is something that's there, you know, that you can min max if you really want to. Other than their great attack profile and the shooting, they have the monster keyword. Super important, because monsters have access to monstrous actions, which happen at the end of a charge phase, so way before combat happens, well, right before. And one of the best things in the game is to roar something. So roar is a monstrous action that prevents units from using command abilities in the combat phase. So whether it's start a combat phase, end a combat phase, anything that might allow them to, you know, fight again, just increase their save or increase their to hit with like all at attack, all at defense, it just blocks all of that. So you're just stopping the opponent from being able to do more interaction in yours or even their combat phase. It's pretty good. If you charge them alongside Fulminators, they don't necessarily have to even get a hit in. If they can get onto a target that you really want to get rid of the save on, you can roar them and they can't get an all-out defense. It's kind of like adding rend to your fulminators, right? Like, who doesn't want, you know, rend three fulminators? So it's one way to think about it, of course. It's not always the case. They can also use the monster's action, Smash to Rubble, which is pretty important in some matchups, which it can destroy faction terrain. This can be really important in a matchup like against Gloomspite Gits, who have a faction terrain that allows them to revive their units. So in a situation like that, you can threaten with the Stormdrake Guard. You may not always, you know, get there or even want to prioritize getting to that terrain feature, but the threat of it being there is something that your opponent has to respect. And I think that's something with the Stormdrake Guard in this list, it's something that your opponent has to deal with, even though they don't really want to, right? It's not the biggest damage in your army, but they have to respect it. So Stormdrake Guard fill very, you know, various roles. You know, they can charge and take an unleash hell for your fulminators, for example. That's another thing they can do. They're very fast. They move 12 inches, so they're a little faster than the fulminators. They can get around the board. They have fly, 3-inch coherency to be a big screen when you need it. If you're facing Iron Jaws and you need to make sure that, you know, the back of your army, you don't maybe want them in the front to be the juiciest target. You may want to put your vanquishers in the front. But if they need to cover a hole on a certain battle plan, they can do that.
Another good thing about them as a monster, they count as 5 models each on objectives. Which can help supplement the low model count that Stormcast typically bring. So all in all, hopefully this has been useful for you guys to see why we brought the units we did. You can see there's a big hammer unit like Fulminators. You can see there's a softer hammer unit like Stormdrake Guard, who are also an anvil. They're kind of a mix. We've got a good anti-armor shooting unit and a good anti-horde shooting unit. Then we back this up with some of the most popular support and screening units. So that's kind of how this list came together. Then, in terms of picking battalions, we picked the new battalion from the season, the Antorian Acolytes, because it will give us access to more primal dice. Each turn, when the primal dice are generated, on a 3+, you can generate another one. These are very, very useful, and unfortunately, it's too complicated for this video to go into why these are useful, but check out our recent live streams on the channel, and we did a whole discussion about them. But extra primal dice are very good, so that took up 2 of our hero slots there. The third hero, along with the Fulminators, went into the Vanguard Battalion. The Vanguard Battalion allows you to either issue forwards to victory or at the double once per game for free. This is just a nice way to save a command point on Fulminators when they need to reroll a charge. That's mostly what that's there for. And then the third battalion is the Redemption Brotherhood. This is from the Stormcast Battle Tome, and this allows all of these units to be deployed at the same time. So we went with 5 drops in this list. And that could actually reasonably be cut down even further, but we actually want a little more information than a one-drop list could give you. Because we have units like the Knight and Cantor and Vanguard Raptors, you want to see where your opponent has placed a few pieces before you put those pieces down. So this list has a low chance of being able to pick the first turn, but that's okay, because when you have units like the Knight and Cantor and Longstrike Raptors, you have powerful range options and powerful denial of spells, so you can survive your opponent potentially going twice. This list is not meant to just buff up the Fulminators and throw them in right away. This list is meant to play a tactical game where you are usually forced to go first. You weigh your options, you play defensively, you soak up enemy charges with Vanquishers, you shoot enemy hammer units with your long strikes and adjudicators, and you play a slower 5-round game. That's the kind of style that I think is the easiest to learn Age of Sigmar with. Going, you know, balls to the wall and just trying to kill your opponent on the first turn, it's not really something Stormcast are very good at, right? We do good damage, and we do a lot of it, and we can choose where to do it, but it's not really, you can't just wipe your opponent out round one. You got to play for the 5-round game.
Yeah, and on top of that, the other reason why we even went with reducing our drops with Redemption Brotherhood is because sometimes you do want to go ahead and control the tempo of the game. If you are able to determine who goes first, you're not necessarily alpha striking, right? Like he talked about, even if you do get the first turn, you don't want to throw your Fulminators in with this list. It's not going to end up being a great time. Typically, you want to be able to control turn order because you want to go second. Going second is really important because we do have the double turn mechanic in Age of Sigmar, which basically, if you're going second, if you win the roll off, right, to determine turn order for the next turn, you can go ahead and take your next turn immediately, right? If you're going first in the next round, you're now taking a double turn. So that can be really important, and why we still want to, you know, we wanted to minimize against some armies that typically can be, you know, 6 to 8 drops. We're going to go ahead and be able to go before them. So that's pretty good. This list can go to a 2-drop. Because we can't fit all of this into a battle regiment battalion that lets everything drop at once. But here, I felt that the five drop was more important. You get some value from Acolytes and just a little bit of value from Vanguard Battalion, just because, just it fit that way.
Yeah, so this is something I would recommend for beginners. This again, this is not the most competitive list. Stormcast can do stronger things than this. But the point here is every unit that you see here is a good thing as a springboard to other lists. You can get these four Drakoths and you can magnetize them to beat Tempestors or Concussors, and you can use them in a variety of lists. Stormdrake, Judicators, Vanquishers, all of these units are just good units to pick up if you're just getting started on Stormcast.
Yeah, that's 100% the focus of this particular list, is what is the most value for building a future army. Like, if you try this list out, you can go ahead and expand into most other Stormcast lists. Probably the hardest list to expand into would be like an Annihilator style list, but even then, a lot of these units are great in an Annihilator list. So they're still worth getting. All of these are absolutely worth getting. If you want to expand into more dragons, you can go ahead and do so. Fulminators, absolutely magnetize them. Tempestors are an absolutely amazing unit this season. But, you know, there's going to be future, you know, GHBs. The one great thing about Age of Sigmar is your models are forever. So you want to go ahead and magnetize where you can and have that flexibility. And this particular season, Tempestors are definitely an option that I would want to magnetize my Fulminators for.
If you're looking for a quick guide on how to magnetize Fulminators, check out our Discord server. Look in the Stormfact channel, scroll all the way up to the top, and you'll see we have a photo guide for how to magnetize these. It's very easy. Even a complete noob can do it. Trust me, it's not hard to magnetize. It's like painting. It sounds hard until you actually try doing it, and then it's not that bad.
Yep. And then some immediate, like, just flex slots for that list. Is going to be if you do want to trade out the Stormdrake Guard, and you don't necessarily want to keep a hold of the monster keyword, but you do want more board presence, you know, just around the board itself, you can substitute the Stormdrake Guard for Stormstrike Chariots. Two Stormstrike Chariots fit into the points for Stormdrake Guard, and you'll have a little bit of points left over. If you want to upgrade your Vanquishers, you totally can. If you want to play for a Triumph, which is just a buff that you can use if you are below the points of your opponent, at 1980, which is what you would be, it's not super likely, but it is something that you can do if you want to go ahead and buy those Chariots instead of the Stormdrake Guard and have units that can split up and go around, just because Stormdrake Guard are a single unit. But it's an option. It's not something that you have to do or anything like that. Play the game you want to play. Buy models that you think are cool.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a look at a variation of that first list with a couple changes here. You can see that it's mostly the same core, right? We've got, instead of a Lord Relictor, we have a Lord Veritant. There's a slight difference here. Instead of having +1 to chanting, so he will be translocating on a 3+ instead of a 2+, he has the ability to unbind, and he also has some additional wounds. So there's different kinds of utility there. He still gets to reroll chanting because of High Priest, so it's the difference between a 2+ reroll or a 3+ reroll is not that big. It's fine to have a 3+ reroll instead. Some units have been swapped out, in particular the Judicators with Boltstorm crossbows have been swapped out for more Longstrike crossbows and a Stormstrike chariot. So these units add more speed into the list because the previous list was fairly slow. Despite having both Fulminators and Stormstrike Guard as cavalry, the rest of the list, it was very slow. So having a Stormstrike Chariot in addition to those units really speeds up where this list can go. And the other unit is just more Longstrike crossbows, doubling down on the anti-armor setup, because in theory, Fulminators should be able to do enough damage to kill most things in the game. So you might not need Judicators with Boltstorm crossbows. Otherwise, the list is pretty much identical, but the point here was just to show you that small swaps can be made, keeping the core of the list intact, but changing out a few options can really impact how the list functions.
Yeah, absolutely. This list is more able to play the whole board. So what I mean by that is you've got three units that can really move around, Fulminators are 10-inch move, and Stormstrike Chariots and Stormdrake Guard are 12-inch move. So you've got three models that are okay with going to melee, more than okay with going into melee, that can move out onto different objectives. So if you were playing, you know, more objectives, this is going to make that a little bit easier. And Vanguard Raptors, Longstrike Crossbows, having the two units, you need to have them split up just for Thunderbolt Volley in this case, which is, you know, very useful. As a side note, Thunderbolt Volley isn't something you always want to use on the first turn. Sometimes you do want to save it. You can use it in the hero phase to get one of your units out of combat. So it's just little variations on things. So as you play your list, you'll understand more, not necessarily weaknesses, but more flexibility slots that you want, right? More things. You'll see that you'll want to be able to do more things with your list. And but this variation does is make a list that can play the board more, right? You can move around, cover more objectives, shoot farther on average. There's different, you know, this list is more specialized than the other list, and like I would even call it a tad more competitive. The Lord Veriten is here literally because we had to cut 10 points to stay at 2,000. So there's, you know, there's th these is the kind of change you're going to see when you're taking one of these starter lists and morphing them into your own list. You're going to have to make some compromises, and you're going to have to make some changes to do the kind of gameplay, you know, that you want to play out.
So looking at those two lists, there's some commonalities that we would add to this hammer and anvil style. The key units would be any priest, so you could use a Lord Relictor, a Knight Relictor, or Lord Veriten, but it's very important to have that model. It gives you a ton of flexibility. The Knight Incantor is something you really can't replace. The ability to stop a spell from the enemy army guaranteed, no dice involved, is very, very powerful. The trick there is just knowing which spell you want to stop. Battlemage from Gur adds more mobility. He allows translocation charges to become more reliable because a 9-inch rerollable charge is only about a 48% success rate, whereas a 7-inch rerollable charge is about 83%. Almost doubling the success rate is crazy. Makes it a reliable tactic. Just make sure you cast Wildform while you're out of unbinding range.
Yeah.
The Vanquishers are a core unit. Being able to have screens is very, very useful. And I think the Vanguard Raptors with Longstrike Crossbows, three of them is a core unit in any Stormcast list. The ability to just reach out 30 inches away and add pressure, especially because they can use Thunderbolt Volley once per game, this is an incredibly important part of the list. But then from there, you can go in pretty much any direction. So here's just a short list of units that I would personally go out and get if I was expanding one of these core list ideas. So you could do Judicators with Boltstorm Crossbows if you want more shooting, infantry-based shooting. Evocators and Celestial Dracolines are a phenomenal cavalry unit. They do a ton of damage. They can fight in squads of six now, as per the recent rules. And they do a ton of mortal wounds after attacking. And they're also a wizard, so they get to cast a spell and unbind an enemy spell. Stormdrake Guard are a powerful anvil hammer flying monster hybrid. They just do a lot, but they are expensive, right? So it's like you could get something else for those points. Stormstrike Chariots are fast anvils. They do a lot of charge mortal wounds to help support your units, and overall, they're just a great pick. Fulminators do all the damage in the game. Like I still think we're almost at the end of third edition, and nothing does the same level of damage that Fulminators do on the charge. It is truly disgusting.
Yeah, not without huge investment.
Right. Tempestors are a variant on Fulminators. Instead of having glaives that can deal infinite damage, they get guns, and they have good guns. Not the best, but they have pretty good guns, to the point where it's now a shooting unit that just happens to have good melee attacks as well. And that's a really fun concept, and it's right now with the current point values, they're very, very efficient and very, very useful. So they're super fun. And then Aetherwings, these annoying little birds that fly around, just get in the way and give your Longstrike Raptors plus one to hit in all phases of the game. So all of these are useful units. You can pretty much add any combination of them. Try to pick some melee and some ranged. You know, you don't want a list that's all shooting, and you don't want a list that's all melee. Stormcast want to bring a mix. Also, Hammer and Anvil is, you know, the most basic style. That's why we chose it for this video. But there are so many different archetypes that you can play in Stormcast Eternals. It is the army that is like a list builder's dream. There's so many viable ways to play the army in a tournament setting. We have a shoot cast, which is, you know, our name for something that just brings a tremendous amount of shooting. I did just say you don't want to go all shooting, but this tries to take as much shooting as possible while still being able to maintain board presence. Stormcasting is the name that we have for any kind of gimmick list based off magic. And when you're able to teleport in the hero phase, there's a lot of gimmicks that you can do with magic. Check out that channel in our Discord server for more info on what kind of gimmicks exactly exist. There's something we call 7-inch Scions, which, you know, the Grand Hammer type list. Mergonk on our channel runs an Annihilana Grande list. And that is all about just dropping powerful units into play 7 inches away from an enemy, charging in, deleting stuff, playing like a infinite threat range kind of style. Stormdrake spam is still, you know, pretty good, valid. Bringing key support pieces is very useful for that sort of thing. Stormdrakes are great, super fun to play. Big Dragon is what we call either a Krondas list or a Karazai list. If you want to just use one of these monstrous dragons and build a whole list around them, you can do that. And those are good lists. So Stormcast are awesome. They have a ton of viable options, and this season has really blown open the door for list building. If you're interested in talking more, jump into the Discord server. We talk about this stuff all the time, and we've just opened up a new forum for Stormcast list building that tries to examine all of these archetypes and more. There's a lot more than what I've listed here.
Yeah. Oh. It's a great time to be a Stormcast player. we just got some great point changes, so definitely a great time to start the army, get in and get ready, because in a year we'll have whole new ones. So it's a super exciting time to play Stormcast.
Yeah. So that's it for this video. Hopefully, it's been useful for you guys to get a good grasp on how to start thinking about building lists, targeting some specific units, why we picked the units we did. We will be following this up later this summer with videos about deployment. We've been working on a deployment series for a long time, trying to figure out the right way to discuss it, and that will probably be coming this summer. So thank you very much, everyone, for watching, especially to our Patreon supporters and YouTube members. If you think we missed anything here or our analysis is lacking, please leave a comment. I read the comments every single day, and I will respond to almost every single one.
You even get comments from a year later. We'll still respond to it.
Absolutely.
And further from that, if you do want to just talk to us directly, absolutely anytime, join our Stormkeep Discord server. We got a link in our video description here. We talk all the time. If you want to talk with more like-minded people, we have a great community. I'm so proud of it. They're so helpful. They're all willing to help and talk and analyze from a very objective perspective. So I'm really excited to talk with you guys every day. We got a battle reports forum where we can see, put all this theory into practice and see how other people are putting that theory into practice. We've got some hobby channels. You can post your models, your works in progress, get some ideas, ask people how they paint, as well as community contests involving painting and maybe even a list building contest soon. So we got, a painting contest going on right now. If you're watching this video as a time of posting, we got a contest for painting Stormdrake Guards. So lots of cool things. Definitely check out the Discord. It's a great time.
And consider supporting the gang. and consider supporting the podcast gang by becoming a member on YouTube or joining us on Patreon at patreon.com/thestormkeep. We post videos early for our supporters. We also offer a private list workshop if you're working on a list for an upcoming tournament. We can help you refine it just to help you squeeze out the last little bit of efficiency. Coming up next on the podcast, we are working on a new tier list for season 3 with all the changes of both point and rule changes. We are also working on a Seraphon tier list update. The Battle Tome has been really shooken up. We did a very long review. I don't know if you guys watched it. It was pretty long. But we will be going back and updating the tier list with some reasonings for that because they received some pretty significant changes. We're also working on our usual list building episode. So look forward to all that and a lot more. So thank you everybody for watching and keep the conversation going on YouTube and on Discord, and we'll see you in the next one.
See ya.